Hello, I am Matthew Caruana Garcia and I would like to introduce you to today's issue of It's Debatable. This is a weekly discussion of current affairs in its second series. The program is run by the Department of International Relations in the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta as part of the course assessment. Today's program will be a discussion of far-right politics in Europe. The introductory session will be dealt with by Dr. Isabel Calleja. Today's participatory students are Lucy Ackerman and Perrine Klett from France, and Ivan Varsala and Alexei Dalli from Malta. We will also have a short intervention by Mark McAuliffe, a journalist who is researching far-right politics in Europe. We can now begin with a short introduction to the topic by Dr. Isabel Calleja.
Thank you, Matthew. Well, the terms left and right, used in a political sense, arose during the French Revolution to distinguish between those groups who advocated a more liberal and progressive stance, as averse to those who adopted a more conservative view. However, the terms left and right in politics are often used imprecisely, and there is no absolute consensus as to what the archetypes of left and right signify. This has led to a number of disputes over the proper usage of far right and far left, other than as general terms of derision. It is clear, however, that far right and far left are meant to describe two diametrically opposed extremes. The original meaning of far right was the throne and altar conservatives, like Joseph de Maistre and Louis de Bonald, who rejected democracy, liberalism and individualism, and were in favour of an authoritarian monarchical government. Today, the terms extreme right or ultra-right are used by scholars to discuss those right-wing political groups that step outside the boundaries of traditional electoral politics. This generally includes the revolutionary right, militant, racial supremacists, and religious extremists, fascists, neo-fascists, Nazis, and neo-Nazis. Parties that appear to belong to the category of the far right are said to be in the ascendant in European politics today. These include the National Front in France, the Swiss People's Party in Switzerland, the Popular Party in Portugal, the British National Party in Britain, the Hellenic Front in Greece, and the German People's Union in Germany. Racist parties said to be of the far right persuasion have also participated in government in Austria, Denmark, and Italy. This phenomenon has been described by some political scientists as the rise of a neo-Nazi culture within the European political system and the threat to democratic politics, and it has been advocated by some of these that these parties are to be eliminated from the party system. Others, however, argue that many of these parties are so small they are insignificant. The Hellenic Front in Greece is, according to one report, a tiny party that didn't even register on the electoral radar in 2000. The German People's Union, one of the three far-right parties said to be gaining ground in Germany, won just 1.2% of the vote in the 1998 parliamentary elections, and none of Germany's three minor far-right parties have made headway at the national level. Others argue that those parties that have made headway at elections, including the Swiss People's Party, which won 23% of the vote in the 1999 general election, and the Popular Party in Poland, which has 9% of the vote and is accused by its critics of trying to resuscitate Franco's politics, are best described as hard right, not extreme right, that is, wanting to introduce tight immigration limits and prevent the transfer of further national powers to the EU, which are policies that have been taken on board by many of the mainstream parties, including Britain's Tories. Undoubtedly, one cannot lump fringe right-wing parties under one umbrella, for they can differ radically one from the other, and today many right-wing parties, labelled as extreme, are trying to appear more mainstream. These parties are, for instance, adopting mainstream arguments against immigration. Others are attempting to widen their appeal by adopting mainstream issues. The British National Party has a transport policy and an environmental policy, and has an ethnic liaison officer who communicates with blacks and Asians who want to find out more about the BNP. Today's programme will debate whether the shift in the policies of the fringe right-wing parties constitute a slow democratisation and incorporation of these parties into mainstream democratic politics in line with the shift to Eurocommunism in the 1970s, or whether this phenomenon is the thin edge of the wedge and a rising threat to the liberal democratic values of Europe today.
Thank you, Dr. Calleja. After that introduction, we can now begin with the debate. Lucy, how do you explain the rise of the far right? And what issues do you think that the far right is addressing?
Well, far right parties have been gaining ground in several European countries since the 90s. The success is ascribed to disenchantment with the perceived failures of left-wing governments, I guess, the growing concern over immigration and the tightening of the European Union or so. But basically, far-right electoral appeal resides mostly in one thing, hostility to immigration. The preferred explanation, as far-right parties make high poll scores, is that it is an anti-incumbency vote, let's say a protest vote against the established parties. People tend to be fed up, I guess, with the main political actors. Let's take the example of France. In 2002, the far-right leader, Jean-Marie Le Pen, arrived in the second tour of the presidential election. Most political analysts defended the fact that some of the people who voted for Le Pen, who was the leader of the Front National, the far-right party in France, did so because they had to choose before between a lot of candidates that had been fighting for months. Le Pen was one of the only ones who stayed a bit behind the political play and then appeared as a likely candidate people can vote for in protest against ridiculousness of the political campaign. On an optimistic point of view, I can say that the rise of the far right is the result of a representation crisis where the electorate feels lost. As a result, they choose the candidate or the party that points problems and gives easy solutions, and that's the case with the far right party.
Thank you. Ivan, what do you think? How would you explain the rise of the far right? Do you think that voters are disillusioned by democracy in general?
There are certainly many ways to explain the rise of such parties and the national European party systems. While in the former Eastern Bloc, such a rise in the far right may be explained either as a reaction to the years of communist dictatorial rule, either a temporary resurgence of nationalism as a result of their newly achieved sovereignty, or the disillusionment with the lack of social security in the post-communist years. On the other hand, in the Western Europe, in the former Western European bloc, such parties had existed after the Second World War, though they were for a long time marginalized. Such an increase in support for the far right started to happen in the 1990s, when the effect and consequences of various policies enacted by earlier governments started to be felt. The lack of integration of immigrant communities because of their closure within the ghetto led to a rise in criminality, which inevitably created a cleavage between the established people and the immigrant community on the security, resources and taxation. On the other hand, the recent increase in the influx of illegal immigration and asylum seekers can also be a reason for such an increase. Another reason may be the movement of the established parties to the center, which may actually have made the presence of such party an attractive novelty for disillusioned citizens who would not vote for two parties which almost have similar ideas. We can also take the rise of far-right parties in parallel with the process of further harmonization of the EU, and hence as a streak of Euroscepticism which has shown itself in France and also in the Netherlands.
Thank you. Lucy, what do you think? Is the way the far right addresses issues a threat to our democratic ideals?
Well, keeping in mind that far right parties are different depending on the countries, they have some common ideologies, some basic ideologies, at least in Europe. On the institutional point, all of them claim a strong executive power, advocating, though, mistrust towards the political parties. They advocate also an institutionalized discrimination between citizens and non-citizens, flouting though the principle of equality. The far right also have an ethnic vision of the national identity by claiming the blood right for the nationality that they also link to citizenship. So considering all of that and taking, for instance, France, I'm sorry, I always speak about France because that's one I know, I guess, as an example, the way that far right addresses issues appears clearly as a threat to our democratic ideals. Let me explain. The motto of the French Republic is Liberté, Égalité, Fraternité. So that's freedom, equality and fraternity. Tell me how. Can freedom be respected when the Front National is clearly homophobic? Do they respect equality when they just invent differences between people claiming an ethnic nationality? And how could we say that fraternity is respected when instead of giving more means to education, giving though more opportunity to our young generation, and to solve problem the youth, the problem of the youth delinquency, they just want to build more prisons and reinstate the death penalty. So the far right points at problems that give easy solutions, but their ideologies are clearly a threat to our democratic ideals.
Ivan, do you think that all far right parties in Europe have the same basic ideology, or how do they differ to a lesser extent?
Well, on some ideas, there is clearly a consensus within the far right parties Europe-wide. Issues such as making pressure against illegal immigration, to increase security and oppose an extreme liberal agenda such as the introduction of abortion, or at least to control it, divorce and same-sex marriage, which according to their ideology subverts the natural and moral order of a society, and to stop the further consolidation of the EU, which they see as a basic nucleus of an inorganic superstate. However, even though there are some general convergences, we cannot treat the far right as a monolith. There are significant differences between parties, which are sanctioned by their national politics, in which such parties are born and bred. For example, while in economics the Front National and the Italian neo-fascist parties aim for a mixed economy system, even to some extent protectionist, on the other hand the Vlaams Belang and the Lega Nord tend to be more neoliberal in their economic outlook, favouring more free trade. Moreover, while on one hand the Front National and Alleanza Nazionale believe in the present nation-state and a strong executive, the Vlaams Belang and the Lega Nord believe in a small central government which either gives say to the regions or even leads into secession from the central core. Even in foreign relations with other countries, there is a diversion. While Front National can be called an anti-Israeli in the Middle East question, as parties like Alleanza Nazionale and Vlaams Bloc, later Vlaams Belang, are staunch supporters of the State of Israel.
Thank you, Ivan. Perrine, what do you think? Are all four European far-right parties different?
Well, in Europe we can find many different political parties with many different ideas and ways of action. It's the case in all the parties belonging to the left wings or to the right one. But here we're just focusing on the far right. Even if the far right is composed of different political movements and political parties, it defends the ideas of the right on economic and religious topics. The main principles are nationalism and traditionalism. They talk with clear and simple words and give the population easy solution to solve society problems, such as unemployment, wage or security. They do that with strong formulation, making immigrants responsible for the issues. However, nowadays this idea is not as strong as it used to be. They now focus on the idea of the selection of the immigrants more than a complete rejection. Nevertheless, even if the basic principles are common, far-right parties can have several points of view vis-à-vis their political position. For example, in the same country like Italy, the two far-right parties have a different visions of the European Union. The National Alliance is pro-Europa, contrary to the Northern League. So even if within the same country the views are so different, you can imagine in different countries.
Thank you, Perrine. We will now have a short break, after which we will continue with the phone now to Mark McAuliffe, a journalist who is conducting research into far-right politics. On the phone we have Mark McAuliffe, a journalist who is conducting research into the rise of far-right politics. Mark, do you think that the rise of far-right parties is a matter of concern?
Well, actually, before I answer, I'd like to bracket my response in the sense that in reality, you cannot really address the question in a short time. It's such an open-ended issue, which has gripped our contemporary imagination, I think, that it requires much discussion. Having said that, though, I think there's something fundamental that needs, is worth saying at this stage, and that is that I believe that it all depends on how we choose to perceive the far right, in the sense that if we look at the far right broadly, I mean, in its full spectrum, we're talking about a spectrum which spans from strong conservatism to ultra-conservatism to neo-fascism and neo-Nazism. So we're talking about a very diverse movement here. However, if we choose to look at the movement in terms of an ideology, I think, yes, definitely, there's a definite threat to democracy, particularly as understood in Europe, in the sense that, at the very least, the right wing wants to reshape considerably, rethink the way democracy has been understood. At the most, it wants to overthrow it. Having said that, though, I believe that if we choose to read the far right as a discourse, as a critique, then in that respect, I believe that the far right could be an opportunity for us to engage politics and rethink democracy in the sense of re-engaging it, of placing it on a more dynamic foothold. So there's a bit of both, I would say. There's the sort of far right which poses a threat, and there's the sort of far right which poses an interesting question and an interesting opportunity, I would say.
Thank you, Mark.
Lucy, I think you agreed that far-right parties in Europe seem to be a threat to our democratic ideals, but do you think that if one of them were to get a majority, should elections be suspended?
Well, first I would probably say that it would be undemocratic to suspend the election, because we have to respect the voice of the polls. It is like if we could choose the results of the polls, and if the established government disagree with the results, they could stop the election. That's not possible, that's unfair. That may appear definitely like a dictatorship of the established power, but having a second thought and regarding to the past, the question is more difficult to answer, I guess. Even though a large part of the population, or let's say even half the voters, followed the far-right ideals, would it be fair to let them rise to the power? Of course, it is a question of democracy, but it is also a question of humanity and general interest sometimes. What if a far-right leader had the same appeal and the same charisma as Hitler had? What if he came in a difficult economical period and proposed easy solutions to enhance standard living conditions of the population by getting rid of a stigmatized population, saying that they are responsible for all their problems? And I'm not even talking about killing them here, just send them out of the frontiers in countries they sometimes don't even know. And that's exactly what the far-right parties do right now. So, what if even, let's say, 70% of the population followed this leader and voted for him? Then what? Should we let things happen in the name of the democracy? I think it's a question of limit of the democracy also there. But I think if as a result of elections, a far-right party would be brought to power, I guess we shouldn't suspend the election, but I guess the whole population that didn't choose the far-right leader would revolt against that. To be true, that's exactly what happened in 2002, after the first two of the presidential elections in France, when the far-right candidate faced the outgoing president Jacques Chirac. There were lots of riots and riots, not really, but demonstrations in France to protest against the polls and to make people aware of the danger. So I'm pretty sure that if the far-right party got a majority, the new government won't last more than 2 months. To draw a conclusion of what I said, I don't think the elections should be suspended. However, this implies that we should trust also the sense of public duty and sensibility which every citizen should have.
Thank you. Alexei, what do you think? Should elections ever be suspended?
No, if the far right in the near future should gain majority within the EP, for example, European Parliament, or on a national scale, I don't believe that the election should be suspended. I mean, the democracy is there for each and every individual within society and group and institution. The people, the democracy is not there for the people to make them win and guarantee them a win within that state. Secondly, if the far right manages to win the elections in a democratic way, then the opposition, being the socialists, greens, etc., should win and gain access, gain power within that society or within the Union, the European Union, through democracy. That is, by gaining the majority of votes of the electorate. For example, we can use the example in Hamas, in Palestine, Hamas. The European Community regulated, strives to regulate a democratic process, electoral process, and once the Hamas won that election, the international community, there was unrest within the international community. Everyone raised eyebrows and etc. etc. So democracy is there for each and every individual within that society and not for those who set their own rules, basically.
Perrin, do you think that far-right parties should be allowed to form part of a governmental coalition?
Well, would it be democratic to forbid them to do so? Whatever the sort are, far-right party of the electorate. People might be free to think whatever they want, even the silliest things. The thing is that we have to condemn racist, xenophobic, homophobic, or whoever use intolerant discourse. But the far-right also defends a conservative and traditional view of the society, liberal economy. On that point, it would appear undemocratic not to authorize them to be heard on a national level, as long as there is an electorate for it. Moreover, wouldn't it be more dangerous to exclude them from the political ground? We mainly talk about far-right parties in Europe, but we have to keep in mind that there are also far-right groups, neo-Nazi youth protest movements, like in Germany, and other factions that take violent measures and commit racist acts. If the people who have extreme right thoughts couldn't express them through a political party or any institutionalized organization, then they would probably express it through violent action. Excluding people has never been a solution to get rid of issues or tensions. On the other hand, as far as the coalition are concerned, is it acceptable for a moderate or even a right-wing voter that the party to whom he gave his vote to accept to enter into a coalition with far-right parties? I feel that even if such a coalition would help a party to obtain power, it would still be a betrayal for those voters who oppose far-right view. Maybe the coalition should be declared beforehand. So, basically, I think that far-right electorate shouldn't be excluded from the government, but that the coalitions between far-right with other party would be insane. Indeed, it would put the political interest before the conviction and the respect of the voter.
Thank you. Alexei, what do you think? Should voters' rights be respected and should far-right parties be allowed to form coalitions?
Yes, within a state and even the Union, for example, the European Union, one files rules and regulations which are applicable for each and every member or individual, left, right. And if these parties manage to achieve the established criteria within that union, okay, no one should neglect these parties from obtaining the rights and privileges. For example, like other parties have, socialists, etc., etc. the rights for a person to establish a political alliance or a party working in coalition should not be determined by a political ideology, since this would be a discriminatory action. The effect that these political parties represent ranges from dangerous to racist and even racist comments, and sometimes even xenophobia within a society. However, in a democracy, everyone has the right to manifest and put forward his views, provided that they are not unconstitutional. If these parties, therefore, incite hatred or pass racist comments, for example, these should be stopped prior to forming the coalition. I mean, within the principle of democracy in a society, one finds fundamental human rights, freedom of expression, speech and association, and these are necessary to be safeguarded. Even these individuals, the individuals that form part of the far right, should be safeguarded by these principles. For example, Alessandro Mussolini, Haider, etc. One can stop such parties once they exceed the limits of democracy, and while when they encourage violence or also racial hatred. Therefore,
thank you for listening to today's program, and thank you Alexei, Perrin, Lucy and Ivan for participating. Please join us for next week's program, in which we'll be discussing water as a cause of international conflict.